welcome everyone joining us here tonight on the Kings County Radio Club Technical Question and Answer Net. I am Roy, AC2GS, and I will be your net control operator for this informal net. I will be your host, and Malen, KT2C, will be your co-host on this exploration into amateur radio technology. The purpose of this net is to provide a platform for discussion and to offer our answers as well as promote a conversation among all participants of this net. The club maintains an archive of these technical nets on its web pages. Also, we offer original articles and reviews on many topics covered during these technical nets. We also publish technical puzzles for our participants to ponder and a starting off point to discuss important technical concepts. Tonight's TechNet puzzle is posted on our club website. The link can be found on the front page of our website in orange color type, but if you would like a simple URL to find it, you can just type puzzle.kc2rc.com. Also, we will be offering a streaming service for those who cannot receive our repeater signal. Just point your browser to stream.kc2rc.com, or if that's down, live.kc2rc.com. This net is scheduled for the second and fourth Wednesday of each month. All of this information can also be found on our club website, www.kc2rc.com. Members, as well as non-members, are welcome to participate, although we do appreciate it when our fellow hams join our club. By the way, an application is available on our website. No question is too simple, no question is dumb. All wisdom begins with the asking of questions. If you have a question, it deserves to be answered. Our format tonight will be to ask for participants to check in only if they have questions or comments for this net. Please give us your name, your call sign, and whether you have a question or a comment. The net will then address each question in order. I will try my best to provide an answer, and Malen, KT2C, will join in. If any other listener has any further facts or opinions, they will be free to break in with the word comment, and when recognized, offer their knowledge or experiences to us all. If anyone has any suggestions for future topics of interest, please let us know here or use our email address, tech@kc2rc.com. And now I would like to introduce my co-host for this net tonight, Malen KT2C. Good evening, Malen.
Good evening, Roy. This is Malen. We'll go to Charlie. Happy to be here, and I'm hoping we get more activity this week than we did last week. I know there's people listening, but sometimes they're hesitant, I guess, to ask questions. So if you have a question, even if you know you think you know the answer, just go ahead and let's discuss it. It's more interesting the more questions we have. And with that thought, back to you, Roy, from Kilo Golf to Charlie.
Thank you very much, Malen. I agree with you entirely. The entire point of this is participation and discussion. Hopefully, it'll be a learning experience for every single one of us. So on that note, let me open tonight's technical net. Please give me your call sign and your first name if you have any comments or questions for the technical net tonight.
KD2NVB, first name is Bob, yes.
Very good, Bob. You are written down on the list. Anyone else wishing to enter their name and call sign on the list for questions or comments tonight? Okay, Bob, we'll start with you, and hopefully later on other people will join us or think of questions for us. So what's your question tonight, Bob?
Well, I've been thinking long and hard to try to come up with a good question. I'm just going to follow up what we discussed 2 weeks ago, a few little details, and then I have another question I can go on to after that. But with the putting the long wire into my radio just to test my HF reception in my apartment, does it matter, A, does it matter if it's one of those, like a speaker wire, does it matter whether it's like a double wire, if you know what I mean, with or just a single wire? You know, double wire seems to take the two. And the other thing is, would it be good to use a PL59 to, what do they call these, to binding post adapter? Probably be a good way to hook the wire up. So those are my initial questions.
Okay. If you are going to use a zip wire, you know, two parallel lines, you might get more benefit by separating the two of them apart and running one in one direction in your apartment, the other in the other direction of your apartment. But yeah, binding post to PL259 would be an excellent method of putting wires onto the input jack of your radio.
So, Roy, I'm not sure what you mean when you say split the double wire apart. You mean like put just one bleed into the radio and then just like pull it apart and just, or I'm not quite getting, or make it like a Y, I guess, connect them both to the radio, yeah, split it the other way and just pull them in opposite directions, so it's sort of dipole-like. I guess that's what you mean.
Yeah, a dipole would be the best thing, otherwise you have to worry about a ground for it. Because you can't just connect a single wire and not ground your chassis at all and get much of a signal. So you're either grounding it to something on the outer ring, or you split the wire in half and put them in opposite directions, and you have a built-in balanced antenna.
Well, that's so simple, a great idea, and didn't think of that before. Yeah, that makes the double so much better. Okay, I think that's... Oh, again, we already covered gauge of wire. I guess we were saying like 18 or 16 or 14 gauge, or maybe 18 or 16 gauge would be the best.
It depends upon if you're going to transmit on it and how much power you're going to transmit on it. Otherwise, it's just mechanical strength, and anything more than, say, a gauge 20 will be relatively strong enough unless it's going to be out in the wind or something. You know, if you're going to put a kilowatt, then go for a gauge 14. If you're only going to put 100 watts, you could easily go with 16, and you might get by with 18.
So you're saying I could try to transmit on, because before we were saying be sure to do receive only. Maybe I'm not quite clear what's going on right now.
Just saying for future reference, in general, wire gauges. As far as receive wires, they don't have to be thick because you don't really get anything other than mechanical strength. And unless you're going to have them waving in the breeze or such, they're not going to have a lot of mechanical stress on them. I'm saying down the road, eventually, if you're going to use wire such as this for a transmitting antenna, you think of it in terms of power handling capacity. And if you're going to transmit into an antenna, you check to make sure that it's resonant at the frequency you're planning to transmit on, of course.
Right now with this test, it's receive only. I'm not going to try to transmit. That's correct, right?
Correct, yeah. At that, the gauge is almost meaningless. The only problem would be if you get something so incredibly small, like a 28-gauge wire, that if you sneeze on it, it might break. But, you know, as long as it's reasonably mechanically stable and can tolerate little stresses, the thickness of the wire isn't really going to be important, because you're not going to be conducting that much current through it. You're talking about microvolts entering your antenna on the way to the receiver.
Okay, so I guess I was thinking before, like, try both the whole thing inside the apartment, see what that does, and then as a comparison, put maybe just one half of it. If I split it, as we said before, hang half of it out the window and leave the other half inside. How does that sound?
Yeah, sure. For all intents and purposes, it's acting just like a counterpoise.
Okay, great. So I guess that's all I have for that. I could ask another question, so it's up to you. Since you don't have anybody, maybe I could just ask it, but I'll put that to you. Should I ask you another question?
Feel free to ask another question, Bob.
Okay, this is probably to Malin, because he has one of these radios, so I'm just wondering... I was looking at the FD2DR because I was thinking of getting a Fusion radio, because I just now have a D-Star radio, getting the Icon 7100. So I thought I want to get a nicer HT. So you like that radio? I've just read mixed reviews of it on EHAM. It only averages like 3.4, surprisingly enough. But a lot of people I talked to really like the radio. So I don't know if you could share a little of that. And that's probably a good choice for Fusion. Correct? So it's probably to Molen.
Kilogolf to Charlie here. Well, it depends what you're going to use it for. That is going to determine whether you will like it or not. If you don't like touch screens, well, you're not going to like this radio. If you wanted a very high contrast display, you are also not going to like this radio. Unfortunately, a lot of the negative reviews are because people looked at the printed advertising for this radio, which shows a brilliant, crisp, and very high contrast screen if you look at QST. And the radio itself does not look like that. It is not even close. Now, I have no problem operating the radio. It's just its false advertising. So I am also upset about the false advertising. But now if you can move beyond that, it is very easy to program radio from the touchscreen itself. You know, you don't have to remember some combination of keys or anything like that. The menus are actually very laid out for Yaesu radio, and things are just intuitive. So you don't have to memorize how to perform simple things. Another great thing is that it has dual receive, so you can listen to one repeat on VFOA and another on VFOB at the same time. You can also do that with Fusion, so you can listen to two Fusion repeaters. It's fully featured for Wireless X, so if you want Wireless X, you can do that. And it has a wide band receiver, so you can listen to, you know, aircrafts or the MTA or whatever you like to listen to on AM or FM. Now, it doesn't have single sidebands and things like that, unfortunately, but most radios, most HDs don't have that anyway. So it really depends what you want to do. Another thing I've noticed, that wide, but because I guess of the wideband receiver, it is very easy to desense that radio. So if I'm transmitting on one radio and I'm trying to listen to my own signal through the repeater, well, it just does not work. You know, my base station radio just overpowers this radio and I cannot hear the repeater. So, and some radios could do that sort of thing. For example, there's a number of club members who have scanners or radios who can do that thing. So, if you know, you have to think about what you're going to use it for. APRS works pretty well now. I think there were some issues with APRS initially and with the GPS, but I think they addressed those issues. So those seem to work fine now. Do you have any specific questions about it? Can we go to Charlie?
Yes, I heard a couple reviews were saying it didn't have as good transmit power as some other 5-watt HTs, even much cheaper ones. I mean, I've never seen that a couple times. So I don't. Other people, I think, probably said it had fine transmit power, but I don't know if you ever noticed any issue there. And also the screen, just so it's good enough, can you easily see what's on the screen, like in all general kind of lighting conditions, including outdoors and indoors?
Well, I've never had problems seeing what's on the screen, but, you know, I do wear glasses, and with the glasses I can see clearly. If your vision is not as good and you're not wearing anything to correct your vision, then you might have problems because it is not a high contrast screen. For my eyesight, it's fine. I haven't had issues both indoors, outdoors, in the sun. It works well enough for me. And for the power, I don't have equipment to measure it, but I've never experienced any issues where I felt like I needed to grab one of my other radios. But then again, really, you don't have a way of measuring it.
Okay, great. So I probably don't know enough to ask more questions. But it can get the, there's a siren coming by here. Apologize for that. Let me drop. Okay, the siren's gone. What was I going to say? Oh, I assume you can pick up things like police band and things like that, which I can get on my little Baofeng HD that I cannot get on the 7100, ICOM 7100. Wonder if that's a common thing, that the HDs pick up those kind of things and the big radios don't.
Oh, I haven't tried listening to police with it. I've tried listening to JFK, the towers, and dispatch and things like that. It works fine for those frequencies. I don't even know where the police frequencies are here. I'm not much of a scanner fan, I suppose. For scanning and just general listening, I've been using my RSP-1 Alpha with SDR anyway. It's a much better device for that. Maybe someone else who has the FT2DR and has used it for that can chime in.
While we're waiting for someone to chime in, it's probably not fair to compare your 7100 with your Baofeng on a bunch of different levels. You have to realize the 7100 is a more broad-based HF to UHF, and it has tuned circuits, so the front end isn't descent quite as easily, and so that puts some limitations on its coverage. at off frequencies. It wasn't designed to be a general coverage radio. It was sort of designed to be an all-in-one radio. So you get some things in one and other things in the other, and you can't have everything in one box, I guess.
I'm looking up right now the Yaesu page for the FT2DR, and they say it has a wideband receiver that covers from 500 kilohertz to through 999.99 megahertz continuous reception for shortwave FM, AM broadcasts, analog TV stations, audio aircraft, public service channels, etc., cellular band blocked, which is because of regulations on that. So as long as your communications is in FM or AM, you should be able to hear it.
Great. Yeah, I'm just curious. This is a little on the side, but like, say, the 7100, it's probably true with all its competitors, too, that an example, the Yaesu 991A probably also does not get things like the police bands and stuff for the same reason. Is that true?
That would be my understanding. Milen, if you know more about this particular model, please tell us.
Well, I'm not sure, but I know on the 7100, when I tried the general coverage receiver, it's definitely general coverage on HF, and you can go outside of the bands and listen, and it is continuous. But once to get to VHF, UHF, it is not like that. You don't have anything in VHF and UHF open for you by default on the 7100. There is a certain range that you're limited to. When you enter, the 2 meter, and when you enter the 70 centimeter mode, I guess with the European version you have 4 meters there as well, and your limits would be different. I don't know how Yaesu has set their limits, if it's completely continuous or not. I'm guessing that by default there's some limitation as well, and maybe you can unlock more with modifications. I would have to look up the spec.
I know a lot of radios allow for 4 meter operation. They have a lockout. Usually it's a little diode on the coprocessor that blocks you from sending the transmit signal to the processor and such. But I think it's more of a technological limitation in that they don't want a front end that's so open across such a wide number of frequencies that the sensitivity and the desensing suffer from it. So I think the all-in-ones are not as general coverage beyond the HF band. At least that's the way I've seen it.
Than this the ICOM does. So anyway, just for your information. Back to you.
Roy and someone else, you guys dabbled almost perfectly, and I was able to hear only Roy, so the other guy should repeat his transmission. And after that, I do have the specs for the 991 Alpha with the receive frequencies.
Go ahead, Bob. I'm sorry for doubling with you.
Okay, I guess I doubled with Roy. I'll get what you said, Roy. I'm recording this, and of course you're recording it too. Sorry about that. Anyway, you came through, so that was probably better. I just want to say I'm very happy with this radio, in spite of it, it's the only one. The form factor fits my situation. I can pull the head into my bedroom. It's just a great radio for me, the 7100. And the police band, I was just going to say, is around the 160 megahertz range, I believe, if my memory serves me. Anyway, back to you, back to Roy, or back to Milen.
Oh, if I may, I did get the spec sheet. So the ICOM 7100, you have continuous coverage from 0.03 megahertz through 200 megahertz, and then you jump to 400 megahertz through 470 megahertz. So you don't get between 200 and 400, and you don't get above 470. Now, the 991 Alpha, you get to receive between 30 kilohertz and 56 megahertz. Then you have received from 118 through 164. Then you have from 420 to 470. So you are much more limited there. You are missing some bands that have been cut off, on purpose, it seems. I'm sure there's mods to open it up for general receive. But as Roy was mentioning, part of this is for design purposes, they don't want to open the front end too much to all kinds of interference, because they might not have proper filtering, for example, or, you know, might just not be designed for good selectivity and sensitivity there. I guess I'll give it over to Rocky. We'll go to Charlie.
AC2GS. Most mods that I'm aware of for modern radios are primarily a transmission-based mod, where you snip off a resistor or a diode, and it lets the processor transmit on bands that are usually not legit. There are Mars bands for people with the military-associated radios, and there are 4 meters in Europe and such. And I'm not aware of any kind of simple mod that you can just knock off a diode and be able to pick up an extra band as far as the receiver is concerned, because I think that's more hardware-based than law-based. The transmission locks are just so that the FCC approves your design.
I guess it's back to me here. I don't know if I got doubled again, but that's okay. So there's a lot of difference between all these radios, but if you didn't come through already, I'm still very happy with this radio. The form factor is the only one that fits my my living space, so that alone makes this my radio.
Hey, you're talking to the choir here. I have a 7100. Milen has a 7100.
Thought there might be a few people out there that are not in the choir.
They're the silent majority. They don't count.
Very good.
I think they are actually a majority, because I think a lot of people have the 991 Alpha or other radios. I think ICOM fans are a minority in the club, at least.
I don't know if we have any particular brand name fanboys, per se. I know there are a bunch of people who lust after a 991. I don't know how many actually own them. Anyway, this is AC2GS, and this is the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net. Is there anyone out there who has any comments about what we've been talking about, want to mention that they love their radios, or they hate their radios, or they love or hate ICOM, or if you have a technical question for tonight, please give us your name and your call sign.
Gene here, Q Yankee 2, Michael Yankee, question.
Very good, Gene. Question away.
Good evening, everybody. Getting back to the antenna, to make a wire antenna which is transmitting, you need to need two sides, like a dipole antenna. Does both things got to be equal to tune it? Because one side is the ground, one side is the transmit, correct?
Not really. That's a real simplification of what's going on. There are unbalanced antennas, there are balanced antennas. A balanced antenna, by pretty much definition, is where the feed point is in the center of a long length of wire, usually a quarter wavelength to the right and the left. But you can have off-centered dipoles, Windoms, and you can have it so off-center that it becomes an end fed. As you slide the feed point away from the middle of a dipole, the impedance goes higher and higher and higher, and you have to simply correct for the impedance mismatch, since your radio is designed to utilize 50 ohms impedance. It's not really, there's no positive and negative to antennas. For balanced antennas, they're equivalent. If you're thinking in terms of a single vertical and a ground plane, it's not really a ground per se, an electrical ground to the earth. It's more of just a sink of electrons, a big piece of metal out there, so that there's a pull and a push with the RF being generated. I mean, you could have a vertical that's floating in space, and it'll work as long as your metal is big enough. So there's nothing particularly magic about the ground of the earth.
Okay, I'll talk about ground plane, right? Not ground, much ground. I'll talk about ground plane. See, my problem is my vertical needs to come down for repair, and I'll be without an antenna. I think I throw a wire on a roof and use that temporary until I fix my vertical. And I'm just wondering how critical length to tune it to get the ends to match.
Like I said before, number one, if it's going to be resonant, then it's going to be something like a quarter of a wavelength for both lengths of wire. And if you want it to tune at 50 ohms, you're going to have to put it in the center. As I said before, if you move the sensor off, if you move the antenna feed point off the sensor, the impedance will just go up. So if you move it far enough away, instead of a 50 ohm impedance for a resonant antenna, you'll get something like a 450 ohm impedance, and then that's what the 9-to-1 balans are for. And, you know, there's all intermediate numbers as well. So if you want the lowest impedance, the best place to put the center, to put the antenna feed, is in the center. You can put it off center, but you have to keep in mind that you're raising the resonance impedance.
Okay. I was wondering, for me to put a wire on the roof, can I just lay on the roof temporary for, until my variable fix, or does it need to be raised up?
Someone wanted to make a comment?
Yeah, since you mentioned the 9-to-1 balance, I use one like that. Mine, I can switch between 4-to-1 and 9-to-1. I have two options in the same box. And another useful feature is that, you know, there are some wire lengths that just happen to fall very well into the amateur bands with a 9-to-1 balance in terms of impedance. You know, basically like 53 feet as one length, I think there was another into 80-something, I forgot exactly, it was 83 or 85, somewhere around there, I think, that with a 9-to-1 balance, specific length of wire, you would get 3-to-1 or lower SWR across all of the amateur radio bands. So that's why the 9-to-1 balance are also very popular with NFED antennas. Regarding just putting the wire on the roof, you could do that, but you're going to have problems probably when it's going to rain, if, you know, your water collects on your roof. So I would try to, you know, lift it up even a little bit from the roof so it's not just lying on it. I've used pieces of PVC just duct taped to leftover dish antennas before. That seems to work very well, and it's very budget friendly, so you could try something like that. You'll go to Charlie, back to net.
Yes, thank you, Milan. You know, the higher you put the antenna, the better it is, but I understand the limitations, but Milan makes an excellent point. You really don't want your antenna sitting there in a pool of water after the rain. So you might want to elevate it a little bit, and of course, hopefully you're not talking about some kind of a tin roof that's electrically shielded that way. You really wouldn't want to put an antenna smack dab against a tin roof, but I don't think there are that many tin roofs in Brooklyn anymore.
Just around asphalt roof. I'm just trying to get lazy, just throw it down to get a wire up for the 10 minutes on Sunday if I'm around.
You could try. It doesn't cost you anything to try, and it's better than nothing. So it might work out. I know a guy, I think I've told this story far too many times, who used to have an antenna that basically sat on the ground in his lawn. And most people who know anything about antennas will just tell you that that shouldn't work. But apparently it worked for him during his day. So sometimes compromises work.
Understood.
Okay, anyone else have any comments? Anyone? Further questions or comments for the technical net. I will remind people that the TechNet puzzle for today is available on the website. It's a relatively simple one, not even a pretty picture. It basically says if you were going to construct a trap Yagi antenna that would have three elements and operate on three separate bands, how many taps would you need? And the answers available are 6, 8, 9, and 12. But first, let's ask if anyone has any comments for the technical net before we jump to the puzzle.
D2NVD with a little more question.
Bob, question away.
On these, the adapter you're talking about.
Bob, you cut off. Bob, you're cutting in and out.
Like a single.
Bob, you cut off before. Can you repeat again, please?
Bob, you're cutting in and out, and you're doubling with Milan. Bob, unless you're checking your radio. Okay, here's something interesting. I think Bob is on the input frequency, but I don't hear him outputting to the repeater. Maybe his PL tone is off. Melen, are you hearing me on the repeater, by the way?
Yeah, you're fine. And before that, by the way, you were, not now, but, you know, a few transmissions ago, you and Bob were doubling when he was cutting off, but I'm not sure if he, like, cut off permanently or something. So, Bob, if you're hearing us, maybe give it another try. I will stand by and I will let you and Roy sort it out. Kilo Golf to Charlie, back to Bob, I guess.
This is Bob, KD2NVB. Do you hear me now?
Back, Bob.
Great. Somehow I turned the tone off. There's a tone button on this radio. As you two both know, you have the same radio. I think I hit it by mistake, and I had turned the PL tone off. And I caught that, and I just turned it back on.
Yes, I saw your signal on 146.130 and didn't hear or see anything on .730.
Okay, so I got to watch it. That button, I think I was probably trying to hit another button, and I hit that one. I don't know. Anyway, somehow I pushed that button, and now we're back. So you didn't hear any of my last question about twin connectors or any of that stuff, I guess.
Unfortunately not. There was a couple of unconnected words, but I didn't get the gist of it.
Okay, I'll try to be brief. I'm looking at these connectors, and
I'm sorry, Bob, but you did it again. You turned your PL tone off.
Yeah, you're right. I don't know. I have no idea how I did it. I didn't even touch my screen, I didn't think. Well, let me just change this menu so I won't even hit that button. It's not even on the screen anymore. Okay, one more time, last time. I need a twin binding post connector. That's the first little question. Is that correct?
Yes, you need two connectors because you have to handle what you're going to do with the outside of your antenna connector. You're either going to connect it to an earth ground or an RF ground or some kind of a ground, or better yet, connect it to a length of wire in the opposite direction.
Okay, so the next little question is, I assume I can just connect. The only ones I can find that are twin are to B and C, so I guess I'll have to get another adapter to go B and C to PL259 and just connect them together.
Yeah, I mean, theoretically, you should use a BNC that's rated at 50 ohms. If you don't and get a 75 ohm BNC, the universe will not stop running. But just for the sake of doing it the best possible way, BNCs come in two impedances, 75 ohms and 50 ohms.
Okay, so just so I get everything at 50 ohms, I should be fine.
Yeah, I mean, the universe would let you get away with 75 ohm bayonets, but you might as well get 50 ohms.
Great, so I guess that's it, and I apologize for all my screw-ups with this tone thing. I don't know. Okay, anyway, back to you, Roy.
Comment?
Melen, comment away.
One other way to conveniently connect wire antennas I found is the SO239 chassis connector. Basically, if you have a run of coax from your radio to one of those connectors, it has a center pin where you can solder your long wire antenna or whatever you want to use as the radiating element. And then the chassis itself has four holes for screws. So you can put, bolts there, and screw multiple ground wires of different lengths going different places, and it's a very handy thing for experimenting with wire antennas, because you can connect and disconnect your ground from it very easily, and they're cheap, they're $2 or less, so that's, and it connects to your standard coax, because, it's just, that's a female connector to the PL259, which is the male connector. So you can just plug that right in, and I've used them, and they work well enough. The only thing is the center pin, you have to solder it, so it's not mechanically stable, so you will need some sort of stress relief in case this is exposed to wind or any other mechanical stress. Kilo Golf to Charlie, back to net.
And also there is a lot of little do-it-yourself projects where you can take a chassis PL 259 and stick four little wires in the legs as a as a ground system and ground plane, and one big wire up as a vertical, and turn that into a very inexpensive ground plane antenna for UHF and VHF. It gets kind of mechanically difficult if you start to go into the HF range.
Actually, I have done that. I did a dual-band VHF-UHF coat hanger antenna that way, and I used it for a very long time, and it worked very well, better than my store-bought antenna at the time. It was a cheap store-bought antenna, but, you know, I made my own thing, and it worked, and I was very proud of it. So these are fun to play with and cheap. Back to you, Roy, from Kilo Golf Charlie.
Yes, I agree. It works reasonably well, it looks reasonably good, and it's incredibly inexpensive, so who can complain about that? Well, Bob, any further questions or comments about this?
Details, and once I'm busy with some other things right now, but maybe next week I can mess around with this and start trying to test my system for HF reception and start embarking on a whole new aspect of radio for me.
Hey, good luck, Bob, and, you know, make sure to try at least once with some part of the antenna wire out the window, because chances are, unless you have a remarkable apartment, outside usually is much better than inside.
Thanks. I don't think I have a remarkable apartment. It's an old apartment, so it has probably what you've said before. It's probably got chicken wire in the walls. In fact, I've seen it before, and it might be remarkably bad. I don't know. But anyway, thanks, Roy. Thanks, Milan. And I'll be here listening. And thanks again. Back to Ned.
C2GS, you're quite welcome, Bob. And just think of it the other way. As you have a very nice Faraday cage, it will limit the amount of RFI in your shack, and that could be very troublesome. We've all experienced it in one way or another. I've had computers or reboots and all kinds of fun stuff happen when a little too much RF got into the shack. So it's nice to have a Faraday cage in many ways. So enjoy and experiment. This is AC2GS Roy, and does anyone else out there have any questions or comments for the Technical Net tonight?
Joe, KC2, WTA.
Hello, Joe, what do you know?
Hey, Roy, how are you? Hello, Milan. And it's funny you guys talking about long wire antennas tonight. I put a long wire up myself today. Back in 1967, my father took me to Arrow Electronics on Broadway in Lower Manhattan and bought a general coverage receiver for me. And in those days, I just had a wire strung in the house. But this morning, I put up a vintage Radio Shack 50-foot long wire that, incidentally, that was shortened to about 38 feet. And I still have that radio. I hooked it up this afternoon, and it's working great on 38 feet of line. I'm going back later to see how 160 meters is doing. Back to you, Roy.
That's great that it lasted this long. The electrolytic capacitors held on, and that's great. It's sort of amazing how a long length of wire can do such amazing things. You know, you look at the big guys with contests with towers and phased arrays of Yagis and such. But ultimately, I think most of this hobby relies on pieces of wire in the air. So great to hear it. Good news. And please come back and tell us how the antenna's working out. 160, that's an interesting place. I go there every so often to listen. I have nothing that's going to transmit on 160 at all. I mean, even my Palomar has problems tuning up to 160. So, lots of luck there.
Yeah, well, actually, the radio didn't work. I was on a shelf in the basement for many years, got a little bit rusty, but I did have to change out some electrolytics. Actually, the power supply electrolytics were doing okay. There was some emitter bypass electrolytics that were bad. And otherwise, I just changed those electrolytics and cleaned the controls and the knobs and did an alignment on it, and it's working really great. It's actually working much better than I remember, because I just had a wire strung in the attic crawl space, and it was not connected to a ground. I have the radio connected to a cold water pipe now. It's a lot of fun to do this stuff, and that was hot stuff that day. I went to work. I guess I'll let it drop here a second. Okay, I went to work with my father that day. He worked at 40 Rector Street. And after work, we went up to Arrow Electronics, and we put the bottom of the line Helicrafters, an S120A solid state set that was, I think, was Helicrafters' first solid state radio. But my father, we walked around the, actually the World Trade Center was still under construction then. And we walked around, and my father told me about the area. The area at one time was called Radio Row, and it was just nothing but radio electronics shops. And another area there called Tinker's Paradise, where it was just all hardware stores with unusual stuff. So, yeah, it's a lot of fun to work on these rigs. That rig was the last radio I worked on in that frenzy of restoring transoceanics. So back to you, Roy.
Okay, very good. Electrolytic capacitors are the weakest link as far as electronics are concerned. They're perishable goods. I mean, sometimes you hear almost miraculous cases where they've lasted over long, long periods of time, but usually they're the first ones to go. And, I too heard a lot about Radio Row. I don't think I ever visited it. My only shortwave radio that I could jolt my father into purchasing was a transistor job, a non-branded transistor job that we got through Green Stamp. And most young people today don't even know what a green stamp is. So that's where I started shortwave listening.
Yeah, I know what green stamps are. My mother bought an original Yankee Stadium seat with green stamps with when it was redone for the 50-year anniversary with a nice little plaque on it. So I remember green stamps. I remember in the supermarkets, they had like a box on top of the cash register with telephone dials on it, and they would dial out how many green stamps you were entitled to according to your purchase amount.
Yeah, those were the days, and that's not my only electronic that I could jolt my family into. I got my father to buy me a wood-burning tool, which basically I used as a soldering iron.
Oh, yeah, we had those. We went through a couple of wood-burning sets, but, the old man was telling me that the area was really something. It was just radios blaring, each, like every store had a PA speaker over its door or, you know, on the outside face of the store, and there was always something blaring out at them. And so that's what I did today. I understand the station that you're talking to, it has a question, wants to dangle the wire out of the window. And like you say, with this man who just threw the wire on the back lawn, and he was able to receive. You never know what the heck is going to work.
Indeed, and that's why if people have the choice of doing nothing or doing something that may or may not work, I always say go for the thing that may or may not work, because definitely doing nothing will not work.
Yeah, well, that's how I got on 160 meters. I folded that 102-foot G5RV into a triangle with three 34-foot legs and put them up on 25-foot flagpoles, and I made a contact about 300 miles away in Massachusetts.
You don't try, you won't know. By the way, I don't know if you subscribe to QST. I get it, and I thumb through it electronically before I get the hard copy, and The Doctor Is In has an article about G5RVs this month.
Okie dokie. Now, I don't know if I got mine yet. I must have got it.
Now, this is the electronic release. It comes about a week or two before the actual pieces of paper. So it just got released this afternoon, and I thumbed through it quickly.
Okay, Dux, I guess I can expect mine. You know, when I get them, I read through them, and then they get stacked up on the floor of the closet.
Yeah, if I kept all my damn magazines, I would have no place to live, and it would just be a museum for magazines. So every so often, I have to take a good long look at them and decide if I keep any of them and what I throw away. And so far, the only thing that I'm keeping consecutively are my Scientific Americans and my ham magazine. That's about it.
Yeah, my pile's about a foot and a half tall, and I have to go through them and see if there's anything worth keeping, you know, on, you know, loop antennas or linear amplifiers, stuff like that. But I just wanted to jump in with that bit of information about the antenna. And also, Roy, I decided I wrote a short outline for an article on transoceanics. But there are two very good articles on the internet already, and I don't think I could really offer anything without just duplicating the work of those two other people. But I think I could come up with something. But what would be more important is on my job years ago, I was also a draftsman. I made a lot of technical drawings, and I'm thinking about making a pictorial diagram of the underside of the chassis, showing the placement and connecting points of all the capacitors that have to be changed. And it would be a skeletized drawing. It would show all the tube sockets and controls and switches and all the capacitors, but neglecting all other components like resistors and the wiring and whatnot. Back to you, Roy.
Hey, C2GS. I'm sure that would be very helpful. If you write it up, it doesn't have to be War and Peace. It doesn't have to be the greatest novel ever written. Whatever you're happy with, because, you know, and even if there are other sources for the same material, you might put it in a folksier way or an immediacy, and, you know, you're a member of the club, so people are more interested in reading about what a member of the club did than some guy that they don't have the faintest idea who the hell they are. So, you know, I mean, if none of us wrote anything because someone else wrote about it before us, then there would be a lot of stuff that wasn't written.
Yep, true. No, I can definitely write something up. I mean, this whole issue of having a pictorial diagram, I made a very crude diagram, with, you know, nothing of a draftsman's flair, but a diagram would definitely help anyone who wanted to change out these capacitors, because that was a bugger, and it was a real bugger to get that done.
Is this freehand you're doing this? Is this computer-driven? I've been trying to find a decent program that does stuff like that. I've used SmartDraw. There's one or two websites that basically allow you to build circuits and then print them out. That's been the closest I've gotten to something that's particularly neat and clean and simple to do.
Now, about pictorial, you're probably talking about a schematic diagram. A pictorial diagram is more a rendering of the physical apparatus. And so that, I think that would be a great help to people. But now, this is not freehand. It's it's drafting. My father was a naval architect. He designed ships, and he trained me as a draftsman. We always had a drafting table in the house and drafting tools. When my father passed away, I put the compass from his drafting set in the casket with him. because that's a universal symbol for an engineer. So, now this would, I would be making the same type of drawing you would see in an assembly manual for a Heath kit or some other type of kit. Back to you, Roy.
Okay, that would be great. I would love to see something like that. So, yeah, certainly. If you do it, let me know, email it to me, and I'd love to put it in our little micro newsletter.
Okie doke. I tell you, I have to get a new computer. Years ago, I had a good computer, and I had a scanner printer, and that just really facilitated doing things like that. I've been getting along with laptops. Right now I have a laptop without a CD, a DVD drive in it. So I have to upgrade a little bit so I can write this up and do the drawings. But the drawings will be done manually at a draft board, at a drafting table, and then scanned for transmission. Back to you, Roy.
Okay. I mean, as far as laptops go, nowadays, actually, they're showing a lot of laptops that don't have a CD-DVD drive anymore because everyone's kind of moved over to USB thumb drives and such, and the mechanical laser-driven DVDs and tend to get dusty, and then they don't work very well. So the newer models that I've seen of laptops very frequently eschew DVD drives. So, you know, your next laptop might still not have a DVD drive in it.
That's me, Roy. That's me. Always just slightly behind the times. That's why I'm building a vacuum tube-based high-frequency station with Heathkit parts. But, yeah, that's what this computer here. It's a Hewitt Packard. Yeah, I went into Best Buy's, bought the cheapest computer they had. I think it was $230. But this is about 8 years old. It was running Windows 7 when I got it. So it's like really time for a new computer. DVD drive or no DVD drive.
I have a laptop. I think now it's going on 6 years, and it's starting to develop visual artifacts on the screen that it look like they're burnt in, except they're LCDs. They're not CRTs, but LCDs age poorly in ways as well. So, I got a new laptop to kind of replace that because it was getting a little bit annoying to see the artifacts growing on my screen.
Yep, so, okie doke. You want to check and see if anyone else wants to check in?
Certainly. This is AC2GS. And this is the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net. Does anyone have any questions or comments for the Technical Net tonight? Okie doke, let's go to the TechNet puzzle for tonight. If you were going to construct a trapped Yagi antenna that would have three elements and operate on three bands, how many taps would you need? Anyone wishes to volunteer for this one? Anyone?
D2NBB, I'll take a wild guess, but that's all it is.
Okay, you can have a guess, or you can explain your guess, or whatever you want.
Okay, maybe this is the easy, wrong answer that's part of the trick question, but I would say six, but two for each of the elements. You'd have three sections of each element for three bands.
Okay, well, the problem with that is if you have two traps for each element, you can't really make a case for how that would be for three bands because the shorter length behind the trap would be the shorter frequency, and then past the trap would be the longer frequency, and how do you get the third band?
I really don't know. I was thinking of like the way they split up just a wire or something. It was a very wild guess. I just don't understand this enough right now.
Okay, basically the way even a dipole works, the trap dipole, is it gives you different lengths depending upon what frequencies, because They have little cans between them that cut off the power beyond a certain frequency. So if you have one trap on either side of a dipole, you effectively have a two-band dipole. At a shorter frequency, it doesn't conduct to the end. It conducts up to the trap. At the longer frequency, it conducts, lower frequency, it conducts farther along the track, past the trap into the end of the antenna. So a two-band dipole would have two traps for the two bands. A three-band would require two traps on either side, which would be four traps. So this is a three-band Yagi with three elements. So what do you think would be the number of traps?
Okay, then it's 12, I guess, because I forgot about each side. Is that correct?
Absolutely correct. The answer is 12. It's two on each side of three elements. So 4 times 3 is 12. So you'd need 12 traps, and for people out there who have had antennas that have traps, they know how useful they are in some ways and how annoying they are in other ways, because, you know, traps often fail. Again, talk about electrolytic capacitors being the weakest link of electronic devices. Traps in antennas tend to be their weakest link. They're usually the first things to corrode and go bad, and either short or more likely open. So, and also they're not terribly efficient, but they make for a resonant antenna structure on multiple bands, which is what's important to people. So that's the answer for tonight's TechNet puzzle, and soon I will update the website and offer you a question for our next episode of the TechNet.
Very good.
KC2, WTA.
Yes, Joe.
That's why I'm a monoband man. I have all my UHF and VHF radios are all monoband with some monoband antennas. They're more efficient. They're a lot easier to take care of, and they don't have things like traps and tuning stubs to get mussed around. Years ago, I was considering getting this vertical antenna that was just bristling with stubs, and you know, all you need is for that to be bumped, and you'll have a lot of trouble with your antenna. So yeah, I really appreciate monoband antennas.
Well, good old George KD2FIU had a gap antenna, and I don't know if you were listening to the 10 meter net in those great ancient times of George. George got out better than anyone else in the metropolitan area. He heard everyone. Everyone heard him. And then someone banged into his gap, and it was never the same. So, you know, sometimes people say that if you put a lot of love and care into a trap and a stub and all that a vertical antenna, you can get a lot back from your trouble. But you know, it depends on how many hours you want to spend putting up a single antenna.
Yes, that is so. I have a 6 meter FM rig, you know, which is almost useless now, just about useless. And I don't want to spend a lot of money on an antenna, so I bought, oh God, I even forget the name of the antenna. It's a Ringo type antenna, and it has a stub that you make out of a section of coax with a PL2 59 in it. And what a son of a gun it was to get it to resonate. And it barely mattered. I think I made a half a dozen contacts on 6 meter FM. So yeah, that kind of stuff I tend to stay away from.
Okay, you know, there are more adventurous, less adventurous. I kind of like simple designs. That's why I like fan dipoles as a basic design mode. But you know, if it works for these guys, then so be it. There are some very strange antennas out there that look like they were cobbled together in a nightmare, but it seems to work for people, so, you know, whatever. So this is AC2TS with the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net. If anyone has any other comments or questions for the technical net tonight, please give me your name and your call sign.
Kilo Golf 2 Charlie.
Yes, Malem.
Reading the new QST online, I also noticed some of the new products are starting to appear there that were, you know, about to start selling at convention, like the MFJ 1708 Model B SDR transmit receive switch, which is still not on their website, but it is now listed in QST. I knew that they were going to start selling it at convention or a little before it, so it's nice to actually see the ad for it and some of the specs listed. And there might be other things. I still haven't finished reading the magazine, so you know, if you're curious what's coming at convention, I think some of the things will be listed there in the upcoming QST cruise. You know, they have to place the ads before the event there. Kilo Golf 2 Charlie, back to net.
Yeah, I mean, it's always a good source. Occasionally, I will pick up my magazine and find something completely new that I've never heard of that's being advertised by a company. And most of the time, it's actually going to be sold, so that's a good thing. You know, every issue, I look at the Flex ad to see if there's even a hint of anything, and it hasn't been that useful for me lately.
I would say the Flex ad is probably the last place where things are announced. You know, you follow the forums and Facebook and things like that. You know, things leak or are announced way before they're actually already on those places anyway. So I doubt you would find something surprising in the ads regarding Flex.
I would agree entirely. Once again, this is AC2GS with the Kings County Radio Club Technical Net. If anyone has any comments, questions, answers, statements, what have you, before we wrap it up for another time? Very well. This net has been brought to you by the Kings County Radio Club. Our club is an ARRL-affiliated club based in Brooklyn, New York. We meet on the first Wednesday of each month. Our next meeting will be Wednesday, June 6th, sometime around 7:30 p.m. We offer a pre-meeting technical question and answer session, much like this net, from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. as time allows. We have a weekly 2-meter club net on every Tuesday at 9 p.m. on this repeater, and as well as a 10-meter net every Sunday at 11 a.m. on 28.380 megahertz upper sideband. This technical net meets on the second and fourth Wednesday of each month at 8 p.m. We have a weekly net featuring Yaesu's Fusion Digital Technology every Thursday at 9 p.m. on our club repeater, KC2RC. If you can communicate using Fusion technology, please join in. We offer an audio stream of the Fusion Net on the Internet at stream.kc2rc.com. Members as well as non-members are welcome to participate, although we do appreciate it when our fellow hams join our club. Keep in mind that an application is available on our website. If you would like to contact the host of this technical net, simply address your email tech at kc2rc.com. We maintain an active website at www.kingscountyradioclub.com or www.kc2rc.com, which offers archives of this technical net, amateur radio news, original articles, and technical forums. Please visit our website and participate. Our website services were generously donated by the local Brooklyn-based web hosting company, 3 Alien Web Hosting, who we would like to thank. As the great philosopher Jimi Hendrix once said, knowledge speaks, but wisdom listens. So try to listen a little bit more and talk a little bit less, guys. Well, it's time to roll this all up and shut this all down now, but we'll be back to do it all over again May 23rd, and you're all welcome to join us. Thanks to all the people that participated tonight, and especially to Malen KG2C. Without you guys, I'd just be talking to myself. So this is Roy, AC2GS, going clear. And getting the heck out of here. Until next time, guys.
Good night, Roy. Thank you for another great net. Kilo Golf 2 Charlie will be clear.
Good night, Roy. Good night, Malen. Great night, guys. Good night, all. Kilo Yankee 2, Michael Yankee, out.
Roy, good night, Malen. Great net. This is Bob, KD2, BNDB, going clear.
KC2, WTH, Joe, Roy, Malen, thanks very much. Have a good night, everybody. 73.